Our next guest simply is the best. Terry Crist, Preds TV analyst, brought to you by Highland Group, joins us each and every Friday at 8:30. Crispy, what's going on, my man?
Well, gentlemen, I have to be very honest with you. Nice to talk to you, talk to somebody different for a change. And I just want you to know that I didn't realize how many closets, how many drawers, and how many sweaters and blouses and shirts there were in our house.
Now you have just a full picture of everything going on around you.
Now I got about 12 garbage bags out of my garage ready to go to Habitat or whatever, wherever we drop them off at.
Nice. Crispy, how are you getting by with no hockey to watch right now?
You know what? It's tough for everything, not just the hockey end of it, but it's the social end of it that you miss at the Bridgestone, our team down there, the guys I worked with, Pete, Lindsay, and all of them, and the neighbors. You can't do it like you're afraid to, what's a six-foot rule now or whatever it is. And
yeah.
I thought that six-foot rule was just in hockey, where you couldn't go near a guy in the ice. Within 6 foot. Oh, sorry. I digress. Sorry.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why he's the best.
All right, so I'm looking at Twitter yesterday, Crispy, and I see a fantastic picture of you and Pete Weber with Slapshot on the TV. So give me the backstory here.
Well, Pete and I, when we first got together, he said there's one thing we have to get straight. He said there's certain movies I like and you don't know and you'll have to know them. The number one was Slapshot. Then it was Blazing Saddles. And then the one behind that, I think, was Animal House.
Yes.
Now, you know, not being a movie buff, I didn't know. So, of course, we sit down, Pete and I. I think now, no, I know Pete Weber knows every word in Slapshot. I'm probably 3/4 of the phrases I can use out there. And we're allowed visitors, you know, periodically you're allowed. And Pete and Claudia popped in the other day. They sort of drove around wide of everybody. And being of the same breed and the same age category and whatnot, they came in and Pete and I are sitting there and we're flipping around and on comes Slapshot. So Miss Claudia says, you know what, guys, this is just old-time hockey with two old-timers. Let's take a picture. So that's what we did.
Toe Blake.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're not that old, son. You know, but remember Mr. Toe Blake, one of the best.
Crispy, how much do you think coaching in the NHL has changed since you were a coach and won the Stanley Cup with the Flames?
Not a whole lot. And coaching hasn't changed. The bottom line is to win. I don't care if you're a screamer coach, if you're a head guy coach, a quiet one behind the bench, a shouter behind the bench. They all go through the whole rigmarole of it. Back in our day, my day, the day before me. And right now, I think the biggest changing in coaching today is the advantage that coaches have with the new technology. And it boggles my mind how, like Law and the guys in the video room, what they can do. And you walk in off that bench into your dressing room, and within 30 seconds, they can give you a whole minute of breakouts of a certain player or broken right down. Like not only hockey, football, baseball, et cetera, go on through it. Modern technology has advanced the game so far, but I always still maintain this, and I'm not going to ever let go of this one. When I walk off that bench, from behind that bench, at the end of a period, if I don't know what's wrong with my team or what's good about my team or what I have to correct in a hurry, then I shouldn't be coaching.
That's a good. That's really interesting. Yeah, I was going to, as you brought up the technology too, Crispy, what was, like, you know, when you were coaching, I mean, I'm sure you guys use video some. We're probably talking, what, we're talking like the projector on the screen?
Oh, yeah.
We talking, you know.
Oh, now here we go. Sure, I knew we were going to get around that.
Well,
I know that I had to turn the handle on the one thing to make it go around and around and around. And then I think it was that little guy that, what was his name? The little guy who used to shuffle and twirl a cane. He'd pop in periodically. But I'll tell you a real quick true story. When I first became an assistant coach with the Philadelphia Flyers with Fred Shiro, and we're just bringing in the replay, the video, the reels, and I brought in two of our top players. Freddie says, bring them in and show them a couple, like a minute or 2 minutes of this, what I want to show them. I said, okay. I really felt proud. So in we go, and I bring the two guys in, turn the lights off, turn the projector on, and I'm watching it. And I bet you it's not 40 seconds. I hear snoring. The two guys are sound asleep. sound asleep in the friggin' dark room with me. I said to Freddie, I don't think this is going to work, Freddie. This isn't exactly what you had in mind. And I'm not going to mention the two players, but they know who they were.
Wow. Preds TV analyst Terry.
So we've advanced.
I would say so. Preds TV analyst Terry Crisp on the line with us. Crispy, we were talking earlier in the show. Andy Kennedy is transitioned from the SEC Network back to being a coach. He coached a few years ago at Ole Miss, and we see it all the time now in the world of sports where coaches go from the world of, you know, one day you're coaching, you're behind the bench, and the next you're in a TV studio somewhere, or you're a color analyst on a game, and there's been varying degrees of success. Some guys are really good at it. Some guys are not. What was the transition like for you going from coaching and getting into broadcasting, and how quickly did you feel really comfortable doing it?
You know what? The first time I stepped behind a camera, I was never bothered me one inch. I don't know why. To me, it was just sort of a natural progression. I was a player. The best thing in the world to be in a there's no better feeling in the world than being an athlete. I don't care what sport it is, tennis, track, hockey, football. That's the greatest feeling in the world to be one of those. The next thing, if it's in your blood, the next greatest, close to the action, to still be in the action, you'd be a coach. Now you're a coach. You're still in the action. You're still in the dressing room. You're still on the trips. Then the next thing is, once you're done coaching, hey, broadcast, TV, you're still in the dressing room. You're still mingling with the players. You're still talking to coaches. You're still in the action. It's just sort of a natural progression. And to be honest with you, when I first went up to Canada to do the Worlds and the playoffs in TSN, and I remember there was two rookie kids up there just starting. Their name was Bob McKenzie and Gord Miller.
Wow.
And I walked into the studio, and the general manager introduced me to Mr. McKenzie and Mr. Miller, who were just pups then, and I was the old-timer, and just took off from there. So you know what? If it's there, it's there, I guess. Like you watch guys like I watch like Chris Mason or Hal Gale or these guys that just come out of the dressing room, just come quit playing, and go into any other sport you want to do it. And those guys, they're naturals. They just know what the feeling is. They know what sports is about. They know what a dressing room is. They know how to handle players, how to handle themselves. And there's no magic potion. There's no big magic pill you swallow and you become one. It's just, so I think it's in your blood.
I mean, I believe you've told me this story. What, you were coming here, what, for a one game to help Jerry Helper for one game, right?
Yeah. And then Jerry Helper, my buddy from Yep. And I said, Jerry, I said, you owe me Yep. Came up, just sat down with Pete Weber, introduced myself. Pete said that. He says, Crispy, I interviewed you a long time ago when you were a coach. Ooh, PG, okay, yeah, all right. But from one game, Sheila and I, my wife, been here 21 years, came to do one game, and have loved it and made Nashville our home. So, like I said, natural progression.
Crispy, last thing for you here. We've talked about potential solutions the NHL may face whenever they come back, whether it's a month from now, 2 months from now, whenever the case may be. At some point, the players are going to have to get back into the swing of things before they come back in terms of maybe a potential training camp, maybe week-long, week-and-a-half-long, who knows what the exact time frame will be. From your vantage point, how long do you think it will take guys and players to get ready and to get back into game shape before the season can commence and we can return to playing hockey?
You know what? I could sound like a genius and say 2 weeks, or I could say 2.5 weeks, or I could say a week. You know what? There's no set time frame for it. All athletes are different. All the guys train different. A lot of the guys that are in the off season will work hard and do it. A lot of the guys probably won't work as hard. So there's no map for that. The only thing I do know is that once it starts and once they open up, the guys better be ready. But I was thinking about this one, and, you know, I don't know who's going to pull the trigger on when is the deadline. Like, there's got to be a shutdown button when you hit that button, it's over. Nobody has the Stanley Cup this year. We're done with it or whatever. That's what I'm wondering, who's going to pull that trigger and when they're going to pull it, because there's a lot of money involved in every sport. Every sport out there, everything is sidelined, and we all know it. It's a monumental decision, and I wouldn't want to be the guy to have to make it.
No doubt.
Yeah, certainly going to be an interesting decision. The further and further we go along in this journey, I think the more realistic that decision becomes. Crispy, thanks so much.
Guys, I want to really quick give you this one. Sheila and I have been talking here a lot of time to talk together. How about when they come back? There's 31 teams. Okay, put 30 teams in the playoffs. Say the last place team, who's last place. Give them the first overall draft no matter what. Let them have it.
Yeah.
There's no job. But they're not in the playoffs, and they won't be in the ping pong. Now you got 30 teams. Start matching them up from whatever, however you want to match them. 30 goes with number one or whatever, two. Play a 2 out of 3 or a 3 out of 5 and whittle them down real quick and then get into the 4 to 7 for the semifinals and the finals.
Hey, I'm for it. It's going to require some outside-of-the-box thinking by the NHL, no matter which way they go about it.
Poor Detroit Red Wings.
The Red Wings are out
again.
Oh, I was going to say, who's going to grab it? Who's going to get a hold of it?
Crispy, always with the digs to the Red Wings. I love it. Crispy, thanks so much for coming on with us today, man. We appreciate it.
Hey, anytime, Greg. I just want to give a shout-out to our city and everybody out there that's working together to make this thing go away. It's not a nice situation, but I'm proud of our city and out there. And let's all stay healthy, and let's all look after our families. Thanks,
absolutely,
guys.
Thanks, Terry. Appreciate you.
Thanks, man.
The legendary Terry Crisp, brought to you each and every week by Highland Group at this time. When we come back, Gary Bettman had some comments about a possible schedule on when the NHL could return to action. We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.